You are listening to episode 40 of the Where Are Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Patrick Hughes. This episode was recorded on October 22nd, 2010. In this episode, you will hear me, Patrick Hughes, speaking with Willem Larson about the Irish Language Night in Portland, Oregon. We talk about some issues that I've faced in trying to keep the night running smoothly in the short-term absence of our fluent speaker. We also discuss some new ideas for getting more people involved in the language night. And we talk about a new technique, WAVE, a strategy for dealing with a small group containing varying levels of conversation.
So for your most recent Irish night, what was your setup?
Mm-hmm. Well, so we met at the Alberta Street Pub, mm-hmm. which is our unideal location.
Yes.
And and we actually got the round booth this time, which is a little quieter, which
was really nice.
And we didn't have our fluent speaker.
Ah.
We had myself and Ken, uh-huh. that's pretty good, mm-hmm. and Wood and Joel were there.
So oh, okay. People. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
And initially, I ran an experiment
mm-hmm.
because it was four people, and that was a tricky number.
Uh-huh.
Because I had new stuff to do with Ken. I had gone off and...
Oh, you did? Yeah, oh, okay.
I had gone off and learned some new stuff because I knew that the fluent speaker wasn't going to be there.
Well, let's set this up. So, Ken, so what are the different like conversation levels of those four people?
Well, Wood and Joel are at the beginning.
Okay, so they're in the same spot.
And Ken... knows a lot of Irish from class,
mm-hmm.
but can't necessarily follow the roadmap.
Ah, okay.
Because he doesn't necessarily have the right structures for that. He might have the right structures for other things, but mm-hmm. not necessarily for what we're doing. And I just know what I remember from a long time ago in schools.
Okay, okay. Yeah. But you're basically, between the two of you, you and Ken, you're on the same conversation level.
Right, and that's basically our advanced table, even though we're not necessarily advanced, but...
Sure.
So, okay. Yeah, I mean, Ken's good at Irish, but we're still trying to work out the mechanics of the roadmap and the beginning stages. So.
Right. So you went and got new information to buttress your conversation with Ken.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, because we'd been doing the same thing for several weeks,
mm-hmm.
and it was getting, and we're getting really good at it, uh-huh. and we needed some new incentive to talk to each other.
Right.
So, because with two people, it's especially hard to carry on.
What are your props you use?
Depends, but this time I had other colors.
Oh, okay.
I brought more colors of pens, which went really smoothly. There was no issue with that at all. All
right. So what normally do you have? What colors of pens do you normally
usually have? There's a red pen and a black pen, the classic.
Okay, yeah.
Warrior keys.
Yeah, and no stick and a rock.
No stick and a rock, mm-hmm. no. When I did try and bring a stick 1 week and it ended up getting confusing.
Oh, okay.
So.
And what other colors did you bring?
I had green and blue and white, red and black. That might have been it.
Okay.
So I had that at the beginning, and I brought a lot of pens. I tried to run a bit of an experiment because we had only four people, which is not ideal for doing Ultimo.
Yeah, right.
Because we're
right.
left in twos.
Mm-hmm.
So what I wanted to try and do, which I didn't think was going to work very well, but I decided to try it anyway, was to have us all around the same table and have different levels of conversation within the same circle.
Oh, interesting.
So Wood would talk to Joel,
mm-hmm.
and that would be, the basic stuff that they've covered, up to where they covered. And then Joel would talk to Ken, and then that would be, Ken would have to talk at Joel's level and maybe slide in something that Joel doesn't know.
Okay.
And then Ken would talk to me and we would have a conversation that was further along than that. Mm. And then I would talk to Wood and it would go back
to
the more basic thing.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I was surprised. I was surprised because all of a sudden, Joel and Wood were speaking in the one have, give, take and the stuff that the I give you, you give me, stuff that really confused us for a while, really well, quite fluently and fast and really keeping up. I was surprised.
So your experiment worked, you're saying?
It kind of worked.
Okay.
But there was a certain point where it was like, okay, well, we've got a lot more to cover here, and we're kind of coming up against the wall. So at that point, we did do Ultimo.
Okay.
We just split into pairs.
Okay. But to a certain extent, it worked, huh?
Yeah. I think what it did was that it was stuff that both Joel and Wood hadn't quite covered, but had covered most of the stuff up to it, and then we introduced just one or two new things into their vocabulary, and they were able to kind of fit everything together.
Okay.
So
cool.
Yeah, it was really great. So they went off and did that then more, and that sounded like it went well.
Okay.
And then myself and Ken were doing the we went to Numbers and Colors.
Okay. So you did a technique which was basically two different levels of players at the same table. Not incredibly far apart, but enough far apart to matter, right?
Right.
And so is that something you would do again? Is it a sort of desperation move?
It's a desperation move.
Okay.
But it highlighted to me that I think it's good to have these people that would usually be an Ultimo, kind of on the lunatic fringe of an advanced conversation.
Yeah. Sure.
To be able to at least be able to hear the conversation that's in a form that's not the mechanical sort of beginning off, you know, very slow and not fluent way, and to be able to hear it spoken in a good way,
right?
And then I think it would become easier to them in that way.
Ah, I totally agree. I think people confuse a lot Sorry Charlie with Lunatic Fringe. They think that if I'm a beginner and I hear a conversation that's beyond my ken, so to speak, I'm going to be Sorry Charlie'd. But if nobody's asking me to respond, I'm not necessarily going to be Sorry Charlie'd at all, and I can do sing-along song, you know, under my voice and, you know, absorb the language. And, I mean, there's all kinds of things I can do without understanding necessarily what's going on in the conversation. And it also gives me a chance to sort of, you know, get sneak peeks at what are the next things that I might be acquiring, you know. So that's a really, I mean, that's what Lunatic Fringe is all about. So yeah, that's totally.
And fun. even in the way it worked there, where it wasn't quite Lunatic Fringe, they were actually in the inner circle. But we had different levels within the inner circle. That I think kind of worked too, in a sense, because they got to hear the more advanced stuff, and then they got to practice their own stuff in their own way, on their own like space and time, so they could maybe pick up on some of the other things that we were saying while at the same time becoming more fluent and just at the level that they're at, without having to worry about necessarily taking that stuff on, but at least being able to hear.
So if you had a technique name for what you did, what would you call it?
To me, it feels kind of like a wave. That's what I think of, because it kind of, the conversation goes up at one point and peaks, and then it kind of goes down and then goes up in a wavy motion.
So. Okay, wave.
Okay.
Wave. Okay. Right. So wave, desperation technique for when you have limited people, but you want to engage more than one level of conversation. So then they ultimoed, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
They ultimoed, and then it was me and Ken at the advanced table, and they went to a different booth. And
okay. And what did you guys do? What did you and Ken do?
Well, we went ahead and sort of, we had actually incorporated colors with Joel and Wood, and it went fine. And then we got to numbers. We were sort of having to work out a few things.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And it was like, I think I remember Bob said it this
way. Oh, yeah.
But I think at the end of the night, we were doing really well.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, we were doing really well. So we had numbers, and we were trading numbers of things back and forth, and we were talking about what color this thing has, and what colors are the things that you have. How many things do you have, and all that.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, it wasn't a problem. But the problem is, that it wasn't a problem, because me and Ken can kind of sit there and talk in Irish with each other.
Yeah.
And we're not really, a lot of it's familiar to us, you know, right. We don't necessarily know how to say things, but the vocabulary of Irish and the pronunciation and all those things are familiar to us. We've heard them a lot. So we're not really forging an effective roadmap for the next person that's coming along. It's hard when we're coming at it from where we are to think about what's going to be difficult for someone and what's not going to be difficult for someone who isn't familiar with the Irish language. And then there's probably things that we're doing that we don't even think about that might be difficult for someone else coming along, the next person that's going to come along.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I guess you'll find out then when you teach that first person. And then once you teach them, however you teach it, then they're the ultimo for it.
Right. Know? Well, the other problem is, too, that we're not on a specific kind of... like, when we first started the Irish Night, we had a very specific sort of one track.
Uh-huh.
And we were trying to figure out what is that, and that is a pen.
Uh-huh.
We were coming up with, like, this is the way that we're going to... There's a lot of different ways we can say it, but this is the way we're going to say it, just for ease of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and there's not, like, a contract.
Right. We're kind of using a lot of different language and different phrases to describe the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And not terribly sure which one is going to be best.
Okay. So, you need your fluent speaker is what you need.
Yeah.
And you haven't had your fluent speaker in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I think we're getting by. I'm happy with the progress that we made last week. Okay. At least. But the major problem is that there's only 4 people there,
right.
And that's going to become a real problem, especially because Wood needs to be in the advanced circle, really. And she, I'm getting worried that she might have to continue to do Ultimo a whole lot.
Right.
And then people might come and leave or whatever.
Right.
Or people don't come, and we definitely need more people.
Yeah, yeah.
And the advanced circle is really in trouble because it's just the 2 of us, and we can't even do any third-person stuff. It's just 2 people.
Right.
And I guess that's kind of a difficulty that comes with learning a language that's not many people speak.
Right. Well, you know, that endangered language is
really
also,
not many people speak around here.
I mean, that's why it's like all, you know, it's like it becomes community organizing in the end, you know, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when I have my dreams about, you know, perfect Wear Your Keys scenario, it's like there's 30 teenagers, you know, like, and all their friends and playing there, you know, I mean, it's like lots and lots of people who have huge capacity to absorb language per person, you know. And the worst scenarios are a very small group of people of whom, you know, none of which are
crouched
teenagers.
In the corner of
yeah, where it's noisy and there's older folks and, you know. I mean, then all those are doable. It's just, it's the most difficult scenarios to do it. So, have you thought about it, about how you can get, you've got your location is pretty awful because of noise and all that. And you don't have enough people. And so what do you think are your next steps? I mean, what are you going to go after?
Well, we're forced to change the location because a street fair is next week. And I'm going to push for not moving it to another bar, but actually finding somewhere else. So.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that'll initially make a big difference, at least just in the clarity of what's going on. Yeah. And we do have other people that do come to the Irish Night that just haven't been coming recently. And
right. I wonder what if we just made it a multilingual night, you know, part of multilingual night. It's one of the languages at multilingual night.
Well, because I don't think that necessarily Bob would be as interested in coming.
Well,
you know, if there's
how do you get that sense? Like, what?
He's the Irish speaker, and nobody speaks Irish around here.
I mean, like you say, you know, you can definitely, there's a lot of stuff you can do without a fluent speaker, and you can just really, you know, get fluent in what you've got, but, I mean, they make it a lot easier to, they really make the whole thing a lot easier. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and then he, of course, is a sort of a portal to a whole bunch of people who want to know Irish. I mean, he's running into them all the time, I get the sense. So, what was the most successful thing that came out of the last Irish Night? What would you say?
I mean, I was very glad to see Wood and Joel speaking really well in Irish, and I was also really glad to see me and Ken speaking really well in Irish.
Yeah, I think
both were true, so.
Yeah, totally cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And everybody was having a good time in spite of all the, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. that's sort of worth noting, you know, that it's like a quest for perfection.
That's the biggest thing for me, that it doesn't become some sort of mundane kind of routine.
Right.
And that's why I was so adamant about having to introduce new stuff.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to burn out why you're there in the first place. Oh, you know, Evan had an idea. He thought it might be a good idea to reframe the night as, like, we're working towards Irish Day in the spring. you know, come to, you know, Irish Night, and we're all going to get, you know, good enough at speaking Irish by, to a certain level, you know, that we'd pick that by, you know, the Lana Gaeliga thing at Merrillhurst, at the Irish Festival at Merrillhurst, that, you know, we'd be able to be a huge contribution there. There'd be like a big Wear Your Keys conversation circle with a whole bunch of fluent speakers, and would be like, you know, the fluent speech room, you know. So just in terms of like having a goal and having a purpose, you know, and having something to work towards instead of just sort of aimlessly like kind of
wandering. Well, I don't think it's ever aimless when we have the roadmap. I mean, it's always working towards a goal and working towards getting further and further on the map.
Uh-huh. So mean, that's enough? That's enough?
I mean, I certainly am very much focused on that goal.
Okay, cool.
And I don't really know what Law and Aguilaga is going to, why that would kind of inspire anybody.
Okay.
More than just speaking Irish.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I know there's, I know the people who are coming to the Irish Night are, I don't know, I've never been to Law and Aguilaga. I'm presuming that they are involved in it and have been to it. But I know that there's other people that would want to learn Irish too that don't necessarily know about that. And if there was some kind of a goal for that, then that might confuse other people that were coming in, and they might think that it was about something. I don't know.
Sure. Well, I mean, you do have a big thing staring in you in the face, which is just not enough people.
Yeah.
So that would be one way to get more people involved. Like, for example, you know, we talked about how the roadmap was something that, like, a person who's already played understands, but a person who hasn't played doesn't really get. So that's not really enough bait for just a random, like.
But why would that get more people?
Well, I mean, there's a big community. A lot of people go to Lana Gaeliga, right? So you could say, hey, for everybody wanting to prepare, you know, whether at Merrillhurst or, you know, whoever goes to that. I mean, there's some, you know, many dozens of people who attend that thing, then this would become like a new place for them to vent their efforts, you know. And then also for a new person, they'd have a sense that, oh, this isn't just a random night. It's connected to this community that has a history. Like, that's all we're trying to do is like, okay, there's a group of people over here, and there's a group of people over here, and like, let's draw a line between them, you know. And okay, you know, like, all the ways in which you can like combine community efforts and multiply the number of people for any particular reason. I mean, you could have like a half dozen reasons why you have Irish Night and give different ones to different people. I mean, whatever works, right? You do whatever you got to do, right? So just because you're saying we're working toward Lana Gaeliga doesn't mean it's the Lana Gaeliga Irish Night, but it can be for the Lana Gaeliga people, you know. But the only real reason to do it is because you want to have people speaking Irish, right? But people, you know, sometimes people need their reasons, and they need to feel like there's, like, connects with their social world somehow. I think that's why Evan would offered that up. And that doesn't make it, like, the best, you know, idea. It just makes it an idea, you know. That, you know, how do we harness the energy for speaking Irish, get it to Irish Night, so you have lots and lots of people, and then not all those people are going to want to learn Irish in this way, so then there's some amount of filtering you do or something, you know. Yeah, another Irish podcast.
Yeah,
thanks. Great. Patrick,
thank you.
You have been listening to episode 40 of the Where Are Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Patrick Hughes. Thank you for listening.